A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, dramatized by Christopher Dennis, with Michael Gough as Ebenezer Scrooge and Freddie Jones as the narrator.
Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, Marley was dead, Gimblet. There was no doubt whatever about that. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. And Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to.
Merry Christmas, sir.
Bah! Humbug! Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and sole mourner. That Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that excellent man of business that he was, he solemnized the day of the funeral by securing an undoubted bargain.
Mr. Scrooge, sir?
What is it?
I wondered if I might take a coal for the fire in my office, sir. It's gone out.
Then put on your muffler. I tell you, Cratchit, any more of these extravagant ideas and you and I must part company.
Yes, sir. Very sorry, sir.
Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle Scrooge!
Well,
God save you!
Humbug!
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas! What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Come then, what right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Bah! Humbug!
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer?
Uncle, at Christmas...
If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should.
Uncle.
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way and leave me to keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me have it alone, then. Much good may it do you. Much good as it's ever done you.
There are many things from which I might have derived good and by which I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I'm sure I've always thought of Christmas time as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely. And to think of people below them as if they were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Bravo, Mr. Frederick, sir.
Humbug! And let me hear another sound from you, Cratchit, and you'll keep Christmas by losing your situation.
Sorry, sir.
You're quite a powerful speaker, nephew. Wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come and dine with us tomorrow.
I'll see you damned first.
But why? Why?
Why? Why? Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love? That's the only thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas. Good afternoon.
Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you, ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party, but I have made the trial in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humour to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Humbug! Humbug! Humbug!
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Cratchit.
Oh, and to you, sir, and many of them, sir.
And to Mrs. Cratchit.
Thank you, sir.
And all the little Cratchits.
God bless you, sir.
Tiny Tim. How's Tiny Tim?
Ah, well. I think he grows a little stronger, sir.
Wish him well from me.
I will, sir. God bless you, sir. And a happy new year.
Humbug!
Compliments of the season,
dear. There's another fellow, Mike Clark. 15 shillings a week and a wife and family talking about Merry Christmas. I'll retire to bedlam.
This way, sir, this way. Two gentlemen to see you, sir.
Scrooge. Marley, sir, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley. Mr. Marley's dead. Mr. Marley's as dead as a doornail. Ah. Why a doornail, I can't imagine. I should have thought a coffin nail would be more appropriate. Mr. Marley's been dead, let me see, these 7 years. He died 7 years ago. Why, bless my soul, 7 years ago this very night.
Mr. Scrooge?
Huh? What do you want?
Well, we have no doubt, Mr. Scrooge, that his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
Yes.
Cratchit!
Beg pardon, sir?
At this festive season of the year, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time.
Many thousands are in want of common necessaries.
Indeed.
Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Yes. Plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are still. I wish we could say that there were not.
And the treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor then?
Both very busy, sir.
Ah, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear that I was mistaken.
A few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is the time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Ah, you wish to remain anonymous.
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry.
But
I help to support the establishments I have mentioned, the prisons and the workhouses. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, that is not my business.
It is surely the business of all of us who are fortunate enough...
It is not mine. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
But, Mr. Scrooge, my dear sir, please, Christmas...
Christmas, humbug!
Oh,
good evening, sir.
And you! You'll want the whole day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Be here all the earlier the next morning.
Oh, thank you, sir. God bless you, sir. And a merry...
Hamburg!
The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no greatcoat, went down a slide on Corn Hill at the end of a lane of boys 20 times in honour of its being Christmas Eve. And then home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt to play at Blind Man's Buff. Poulterers and grocers' trade became a splendid joke, a glorious pageant, with which it was next to impossible to believe that such dull principles as bargain and sale had anything to do. Scrooge, lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. They were a gloomy suite of rooms in a lowering building up a yard where it had so little business to be that one could scarcely have fancied it must have run there when it was a young house, playing at hide-and-seek with other houses and have forgotten the way out again. It was old enough now and dreary enough, for nobody lived in it but Scrooge. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the City of London. And then, let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face.
Jacob Marley.
Marley's face, looking at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead.
No, it's...
A knocker again.
Humbug.
He paused before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind it first, as if he half expected to be terrified with the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on.
Pooh.
Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for the dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Nobody under the table, nobody under the sofa, nobody under the bed. A small fire in the grate, spoon and basin ready, and a little saucepan of gruel upon the hob. Satisfied, he locked himself in. Double locked himself in, which was not his custom. He put on his nightcap and dressing gown and slippers and sat down before the tiny fire to take his gruel.
Lovely gruel, lovely and cheap.
A disused bell hung in the room. It was with great astonishment and a strange, inexplicable dread that, as he looked at it, for no particular reason, it began to swing. It swung so softly at the outset that it scarcely made a sound. But soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in that huge, empty house. From the cellar far below.
Oh, humbug! Humbug! There's nobody there. It's humbug still. I won't believe it.
The same face. The very same. Marley, with his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots. The chain he wore was clasped about his knee. It was long and wound about him like a tail. It was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds and heavy purses wrought in steel.
I don't believe it. I won't believe it. It's
a Scrooge.
How now? What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me rather who I was.
Who were you then? You're particular for a shade.
I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it then.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why not? Why do you doubt your senses?
Because any little thing can upset them. An upset of the stomach, indigestion, they become cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more gravy than grave about you, whatever you are. Here, do you see this toothpick?
I do.
You're not looking at it.
I see it, notwithstanding.
Oh, well, I have but to swallow this to be for the rest of my days persecuted by a legion of goblins entirely of my own creation. It's all humbug, I tell you. Humbug! Mercy, dreadful apparition. Why do you trouble me?
Do you believe in me or not?
I do, I'm a mess. But why do spirits walk the earth and why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me, and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turned to happiness. Oh, woe, woe.
You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Is this pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It is full as heavy and as long as this. 7 Christmases ago, you have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain, Ebenezer.
Jacob. Old Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. A very little more is all that is permitted to me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house, and weary journeys lie before me.
You were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind should have been my business. The common welfare, my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence, all my business. At this time of the year, the rolling year, I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poor abode?
Well, I...
Hear me. My time is nearly gone.
Oh, I will. Only don't be hard upon me. Don't be flowery, Jacob.
Pray. I'm here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me, thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?
It is.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one.
But couldn't I take them all at once and get it over with, Jacob?
Expect a second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Now look to see me no more. For your own sake, you remember what has passed between us.
Why, Jacob, don't go through the window, Jacob. Would it not be wiser to leave by the stair? It is a fearful drop, Jacob. Why? What's this, Jacob? And who are they walking on the clouds so laden down with chains and ledgers and cash boxes? And why, there's Oath.
They are my companions. Good men of business, everyone. Now we wander through eternity together, dragging the chains that we have forged in lives of good business.
Yes, it's Old, what's his name? My, but that's a monstrous iron safe for a man of his age to be carrying.
Look to see me no more.
But, Jacob, don't go. Can't you tell me more about these spirits, Jacob? You see, I'm not sure that I...
Whether these creatures faded into mist, or whether the mist enshrouded them, he could not tell. But they and their spirit voices faded together, and the night became still and crisp as it had been. He tried to say, hum, but stopped at the first syllable. And being, from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigue of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, much in need of repose, went straight to bed and fell asleep upon the instant. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that he could hardly distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. But suddenly, the curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge, starting up into a half-recovered attitude, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair was white, yet its face had not a wrinkle on it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. It held a branch of fresh green holly in its hand, and, in singular contradiction of that wintry emblem, had its dress trimmed with summer flowers. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head sprang a bright, clear jet of light.
Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
You dazzle me. You hurt my eyes. I pray you be covered.
What? Would you put out with worldly hands the light I give?
I didn't mean to offend. May I inquire what business brings you here?
Your welfare.
I'm much obliged, but I can't help feeling that a good night's sleep...
Rise and walk with me.
But the weather, the hour, my... Bed is warm and the night air outside must be... And I'm coming.
Follow.
What? Through the window? But I am mortal and liable to fall.
Bear but the touch of my hand here, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
Oh. As the words were spoken, it passed through and stood in the instant upon an open country road.
Do you know where we are?
Good heavens. I was bred in this place. I was a boy here. I was happy here.
Do you recollect the way?
Remember it? I could walk it blindfold.
Strange to have forgotten it for so many years.
Merry Christmas to ye, Mrs. Burgess.
How do you, sir? Why, yes, it's Mrs. Burgess lived at the Grange, and he's Davis the carpenter. A Merry Christmas.
Keep on. Come on, young sir. Keep on.
Oh, a Merry Christmas, Mrs. Burgess. Mr. Davis.
And to you, young sir.
Oh, that's Charlotte Simpkins. That's her little brother, Tom. Merry Christmas to you, sir. Why, they don't see me.
These are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of us.
Oh, I should have liked...
Well?
I should have liked, well, to wish them a Merry Christmas for old times.
What is Merry Christmas to you? Out upon Merry Christmas. What good has it ever done you?
Why, these were my companions. We were all at school together. Look at them running. So glad to be released. So glad to be out of that awful place for the holidays. Going home for Christmas.
The school is not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still. See? Look here.
Oh, I know it. I recall this long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of wooden forms and desks, and that poor, lonely boy, left all alone Christmas after Christmas, with nothing but his storybooks for companions. Poor boy. Poor boy. I wish...
What is the matter?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all.
Master Scrooge! Master Scrooge!
Yes, sir.
Yes, coming, sir. Coming, sir.
Where are you hiding? You might as well come out. You know I'll find you. I always find you. And when I do...
Here, sir. In here, sir. I wasn't hiding. Oh. I...
Ah! Oh, goodness. So this is where you're skulking. You've a visitor, Master Scrooge.
A visitor?
Hello, Ben.
Oh, dearest sister.
Ben.
Ha!
Fan! Little Fan!
Oh, Ben, dear brother, I have come to bring you home.
Home? But Fan! Father!
Yes, home for good and all. Father is so much kinder than he used to be, that home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one night when I was going to bed, that I wasn't afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said, yes, you should, and sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man and never to come back here.
Never!
No, never, never, never. And we're to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in all the world.
Master Scrooge!
You came in a coach, Fan. Where is it?
In the drive outside.
Come quickly, quickly!
Master Scrooge!
Fan!
She was always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered, but she had a large heart.
So she had, you're right. I will not gainsay its spirit, God forbid.
She died a woman and had, as I think, children.
One child.
Your nephew.
Yes.
Come!
And the gloomy, dreary school, the prison of Scrooge's youth, was gone in the twinkling. They were now in the busy thoroughfare of the city, where shadowy people passed and repassed, where shadowy carriages and carts battled for the way, and all the strife and tumult of a real, substantial city assailed their senses. The ghost led Scrooge into a certain warehouse.
Do you know this place?
Know it! I was apprenticed here.
Dick! Ebenezer! Yo-ho! Yo-ho! Now, where are you, boy?
It's old Fizzywig. Bless his heart. He's Fizzywig alive again.
Still at your neighbor's, are you? On Christmas Eve?
Ah! Why, there's Dick Wilkins, to be sure. Bless me. Yes, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick.
Coming, Mr.
Fenton. Ah, Ebenezer, there you are.
Why, there's me.
Jump, hey. Up with the shutters, hey. Up with the garlands.
Right,
let's have those decorations up before a man can say Jack Robinson.
He was always a great one for Christmas spirit.
No,
he loves Christmas. Just look at him now.
It's time to play. Time to sing and make merry. Where's that fiddler? Where's that old John Jackson? With his fiddle that shrieks like 50 stomachaches. Where is he?
He's coming, Mr. Fenny. Ah,
Mr. Fenny.
And a Merry Christmas to me.
And to you, old John. And to you. God bless you. Well, tune up, old fellow. Tune up. And let's have a catch to sit our feet and dappies. Hey, up with the holly now, Dick. Come on. Higher there. Higher. Yeah, and the mistletoe. Don't forget the mistletoe.
The mistletoe was found and hung where it could not be avoided. The floor was swept and watered. The lamps were trimmed. Fuel was heaped upon the fire. And the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you would desire to see upon a winter's night.
Ah, my girl.
In came the three Mrs. Fezziwig, and in came the six young followers whose hearts they broke, and then in came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile.
Ah, Mrs. Fezziwig, your most humble servant, ma'am.
Oh, Fezziwig, get off with you.
No, I beg you'll accompany me a step or two, ma'am. Come along.
No, Mr. Fezziwig, where are you taking me, pray?
Just another step, ma'am. No, that's too far. Back up a touch, old girl. There.
What are you doing, Judy? What will people think?
What will they think, indeed? They'll think there's a pretty, pert young woman who's old enough to know better than to go standing under mistletoe asking for trouble. Quick, lad! Kiss the hussy! Oh, and here, come again! Good evening, to you. Come in out of the cold night air. And a Merry Christmas to you.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Fezziwig. God bless you, Mr. Fezziwig. Your own warehouse. You've got a palace. Fit for a feast, eh? Fit for a feast.
And fit for a princess, eh? And here comes the princess. Come in, Belle, my dear. Come in.
Happy Christmas to you, Mr. Fezziwig.
Come with me, sweet Belle. Before that Ebenezer keeps you to himself for the rest of the evening, eh? Let an old fellow have his moment, eh? Strike up, old John! Strike up! Let's have a dance!
Yes, have Sir Roger de Coverley!
Come, Mrs. Fezziwig, come! Let us old ones show the youngsters how Sir Roger de Coverley should be done! Come on, come on, and take your partners! And a Merry Christmas to you all! A Merry Christmas to all the world! God bless it!
And a Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Fezziwig! God bless you!
Hurrah for Mr. Fezziwig!
Hurrah! Hurrah!
God bless you!
A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small?
Is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
Oh, it isn't that. It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
What is the matter?
Nothing in particular.
Something, I think.
No. I should just like to be able to say a word or two to my class just now. That's all.
My time grows short. Look. Look here.
But, Belle, how can you think that of me?
Dear Ebenezer, another idol has replaced me in your heart. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve.
What idol has displaced you?
A golden one. You fear the world too much. All your other, finer hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off, one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you.
Belle!
I must release you.
Have I ever sought release?
In words? No, never.
In what, then?
In a changed nature. An altered spirit. Your proposed partnership in business with Jacob Marley, this has altered you most of all. It seems that to both of you, business is to be your entire world. There will be not space nor time for aught but business.
Jacob is a good man.
I grant you. A good man of business.
But what has this to do with you and I?
Tell me, and tell me truly, if this contract made between us when you were a boy, and when we thought as one, had never been, would you seek me out and try to win me now?
Yes, say yes. You think not.
I would gladly think otherwise if I could. Heaven knows.
Let us waste no more time on this conversation, Belle.
No. Let us not. You may, I half hope you will, have pain in this parting, but I know that in a very brief time you will dismiss the recollection of it as an unprofitable dream from which you awoke in time.
Oh, no, no.
May you be happy in the life you have chosen. Goodbye, Ebenezer. Goodbye.
No, no, fool, go after her. Beg her forgiveness.
She cannot hear you. See, he is already engrossed in his ledgers and his columns of figures. That is where his heart lies. He has already made his choice.
Oh, spirit, show me no more. No more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?
I show you only what has been. What you have been.
I see it and I feel it. Now take me home, I beg of you.
My time is short. Yet there is one shadow more that you must see.
No more. No more. I don't wish to see it. Show me no more.
Look.
Quietly, hide. She mustn't see us.
Children. Oh, I could have sworn they were...
What? Belle?
She is a mother now and another's wife.
Now, where did I put it? I get more absent-minded every day. Oh, you made me jump.
A Merry Christmas, Mother.
A Merry Christmas. Here. What's all this? What are these?
Your presents, Mother.
For Christmas.
She's been saving and saving.
And making.
Yes, they have, Mother, all the year through. For the best mother in the world.
And here, my dear. This is for the best wife in the world. Do you know, oddly enough, they both seem to be the same person.
Oh, well, thank you, my dear.
Look what I've got, Father.
Look what I got for Christmas.
I've got a book, Father. Will you read it with me?
Sue, my dear. Belle, I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon.
Oh, who was it?
Yes.
How can I guess?
£50 for 2 years at 7% compound interest. But where's your security, eh? Show me your security or I'll be forced to foreclose.
Oh, I know. It's Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge it was. For nobody dares to call him Ebenezer anymore. Now he's Mr. Scrooge to all the world. I passed his counting house window. As it was not shuttered and his candle was lit, I couldn't help seeing him. Still counting up his endless lines of figures on Christmas Eve. His partner, Jacob Marley, lies upon the point of death, I hear. And there sat Ebenezer all alone. He'll be quite alone in all the world, I do believe.
What a dreadful thing to be alone in the world. We'll never be alone, will we, Mother?
Why, no, my dear. We have each other, haven't we?
Yes, we have each other.
Won't you play for us, Belle?
Oh, my fingers are so stiff these days.
Oh, yes. Do play for us, Mother.
We should sing tonight. Celebrate. Christmas Eve, after all.
No, we'll never be alone. We have each other. And the best father that ever was called father to care for us all.
To think that such another creature, quite as graceful and as full of promise, might have called you father. And been a springtime in the haggard winter of your life.
Spirit, remove me from this place.
I told you that these were the shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me.
Remove me. I cannot bear it. Take me back. Haunt me no longer.
The spirit's light was burning high, and seizing the huge extinguisher cap that it carried in its hand, Scrooge, by a sudden action...
Leave me be! Leave me be!
...thrust it down upon its head so that the extinguisher covered its whole form like a candle being snuffed out. Conscious of being exhausted and, further, to his surprise, of being in his own room once more... He gave the cap a parting squeeze before he sank into a heavy sleep. He sat up in bed suddenly in the midst of a prodigious snore.
1 o'clock and nothing. Nobody. Nothing! A dream, all a dream! Jacob Marley! Marley's dead!
Yet, though he was alone, he was acutely conscious of being the very core and center of a blaze of ruddy light, which seemed to emanate from the adjoining room. He got up and softly shuffled in his slippers to the door.
Ghost of the past? Ghost of humbug? It's all humbug.
Ebenezer Scrooge! Come in! Ebenezer Scrooge!
The room had undergone a surprising transformation. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove, from every part of which gleaming berries glistened. Crisp leaves of holly, mistletoe, and ivy reflected back the light of a blazing fire. Heaped upon the floor, to form a kind of throne, were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, great joints of meat, sucking pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, red hot chestnuts, and seething bowls of punch that made the chamber dim with their delicious steam.
Come in. Come in and know me better, man.
In easy state upon his couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, clothed in a vast green robe and with a wreath of holly on his head. He bore a glowing torch in shape not unlike Plenty's horn and held it up high to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door.
Who are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You've never seen the like of me before.
Never.
Have never walked forth with the younger members of my family, meaning, for I am very young, my elder brothers, born in those later years.
I don't think I have, I'm afraid I have not. Have you had many brothers, Spirit?
More than 1,800.
A tremendous family to provide
for. Oh, miserable man.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night upon compulsion, and I learnt a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe!
And in the instant, they stood upon a busy street, on the brightest, crispest of Christmas mornings. The poulterers' shops were still half open, and the fruiterers were radiant in their glory. There were great, round, pot-bellied baskets of chestnuts, shaped like the waistcoats of jolly old gentlemen, lolling at the doors and tumbling into the street with their wanton apoplectic opulence. And there emerged from scores of nameless alleyways innumerable poor and ragged revellers carrying their dinners to the baker's shop to cook. The spirit stood at the baker's door and, taking off the covers as their bearers passed, sprinkled incense on their dinners from his torch.
Spirit, is there some particular flavor in what you sprinkle from your torch?
There is. My own.
Would it apply to any kind of dinner on this day?
To any kindly given. To a poor one most.
Why to a poor one most?
Because it needs it most.
Ah, yes, I see that now.
And perhaps it was the pleasure the good spirit had in showing off this power of his. Or else it was his own kind, generous, hearty nature and his sympathy with all poor men that led him straight to Scrooge's clerks. Well, there he went, and took Scrooge with him, holding on to his robe. And on the threshold of the door, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's dwelling with the sprinklings of his torch.
See here.
Mother, how fine you look.
Oh, how fashionable.
Why, go on with you. It's just my old gown that I've had these many years. A few ribbons is all I've added to it. Silk. They're cheap enough and make a goody show for sixpence. I want to look as smart as I can for your father on Christmas Day. Here's the cloth, Belinda. You and Charlotte cover the table now and set out the knives and forks. How are those potatoes, Peter?
Nearly done, Mother. Nearly done.
Why are you talking in that funny voice, Peter?
It's that old collar of father's. It's much too high for him, Mother.
No, it's not. You look very smart, Peter.
Look at him, though. He daren't turn his head for fear of cutting his ears off.
Pay no attention to them, Peter. They're only jealous that you're so grown up now. Quite a young gentleman, in fact. Has ever got your precious father, though? And Tiny Tim. And Martha weren't as late last Christmas Day by half an hour.
Oh, here's Martha, Mother.
Oh, they're such a good Martha.
Why, bless your heart alive, my dear. How late you are.
Oh, we had a deal of work to finish last night and had to clear away this morning, Mother.
Well, never mind. So long as you are calm. Sit down before the fire, my dear. Now, Lord, warm, Lord, bless you.
No, Martha, no. His father coming.
Hide, Martha.
So Martha hid herself, and in came little Bob, the father, with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame. And, as he could not walk unaided, his father had been his racehorse and borne him at a canter all the way from the church.
Oh, sorry, my dear. Here we are at last, then. Oh, there. Down you go, Tim. There now. Steady now. Sit yourself down here before the fire. There's my fine jockey. Why, where's our Martha?
Not coming.
Oh, no, poor Martha.
What? Not coming? Not coming on Christmas Day? I can't believe it. I know they work her far too hard at that place, poor lamb that she is, but, well, Christmas Day.
Here I am, Father.
Martha.
Oh, it's not fair to tease you.
Martha.
Now, come along, all of you, or the goose will be stone cold.
Come on, Tim, lean upon me. Come and hear the pudding.
Hear it? Puddings don't make a noise. They don't speak.
This one does, and better. It sings. It's out there in the copper now, singing away to itself. Come and hear.
And how did Tiny Tim behave himself in church?
Oh, as good as gold and better. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him sitting in the church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant for them to remember upon Christmas Day who it was made lame beggars walk and blind men see. I think he's growing stronger.
Come along now.
Oh, come along, Father.
Yes, indeed. Come along. Let's have that goose onto the table for carving.
Yes.
Serve up the potatoes, Peter. Fetch the punch, Martha.
Yes, sir.
Belinda, Tim, Charlotte, come along now. Time for Christmas dinner.
Such a bustle ensued that you might have supposed a goose to be the rarest of all birds. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy hissing hot. Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table, and grace was said.
What we're about to receive, amen.
It was succeeded by a breathless pause, as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it into the breast.
Oh, why, there never was such a goose. I don't believe such a goose was ever cooked.
It's very tender. I'll say that for you.
Smell the flavor.
And quite a size, really.
And very cheap. Well, considering it's there.
Eked out by applesauce and mashed potato, it was a sufficient meal for all the family. Indeed, as Mrs. Cratchit said with a great delight, surveying one small atom of a bone upon the dish.
We haven't ate it all at last.
Now, the plate being changed by Miss Belinda, Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone, too nervous to bear witness, to take the pudding up and bring it in.
Suppose somebody should have got over the wall of the backyard and stolen it. Suppose it shouldn't be dumb enough. Suppose it should break in turning out.
There was a great deal of steam.
That's the pudding, Tim, out of the copper.
It smells like washing day.
That's the cloth.
A smell like an eating house and a pastry cook's next door to each other, with the laundresses next to that.
Is that the pudding?
It is, Tim. That's the pudding.
Mrs. Cratchit entered, flushed but smiling proudly, with the pudding, like a speckled cannonball, so hard and firm, blazing in half a quartern of ignited brandy and bedight with Christmas holly stuck into the top.
That's your pudding. Here you are now, children. God bless you.
God bless us, everyone.
Spirit, tell me, will Tiny Tim live?
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
Oh, no, Spirit, no. Speak some comfort to me. Say that this child may be spared.
What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Oh, Spirit.
Man, if man you be in heart, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what that surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child.
Spirit.
Hush, hush. Listen.
Charge all the cups, Mother. Rise, children, and raise them high. Are we ready?
Ready, Father.
Then I give you the founder of the feast, Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, the founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast up on.
My dear children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day. I'm sure on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. Well, he is, Robert. You know he is. Nobody knows it better than you, poor fellow.
My dear Christmas Day.
Well, I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, but not for his. Long life to him, a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
And all of us, too.
God bless us. God bless us, everyone.
They were not a handsome family. They were not well dressed. Their shoes were far from waterproof and their clothes were scanty. But they were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time. And when they faded, Scrooge had his eye upon them, and especially on Tiny Tim, until the last. Suddenly, Scrooge was clinging for dear life to the spirit's robe as they sped through the night sky. Whither? Not to see. To see. To Scrooge's horror, looking back, he saw the last of the land, a frightful range of rocks behind them. And his ears were deafened by the thundering of the water as it rolled and roared and raged. Built upon a dismal reef of sunken rock, some league or so from shore, there stood a solitary lighthouse. Great heaps of seaweed clung to its face, and storm birds, born of the wind, rose and fell about it like the waves they skim. But even here, the two men who watched the light had made a fire that shone out a ray of brightness on that awful sea and celebrated Christmas. Again the ghosts sped on above the black and heaving sea until, far away, they lighted on a ship. They stood beside the officers who had the watch, dark, ghostly figures in their several stations, but every man among them had a Christmas thought with homeward hopes belonging to it.
A Merry Christmas to ye! To you, friend! And to you!
It was a great surprise to Scrooge, therefore, when...
It's true, I tell you. He said Christmas was a humbug. As I live and breathe, he believed it, too.
Well, more shame to him. It ought to be ashamed.
It was an even greater surprise to find himself in the bright, dry, gleaming drawing room of his nephew's house. Present were his nephew, his niece by marriage, his niece by marriage's sister, and a young gentleman who clearly doted upon her.
Well, I'm sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head not to dine with us. Well, what's the consequence? He don't lose much of a dinner.
Oh, indeed. I think he loses a very good dinner.
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, so do I, indeed.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, for I don't have any great faith in these young housekeepers. Oh. What do you say, Topper?
Oh, I think of a bachelor. He's a wretched outcast who has no right to express an opinion on the subject.
Do you indeed?
Oh, you go on, Fred. He never finishes what he begins to say. He's such a ridiculous fellow.
I was only going to say that the consequence of his refusing to make merry with us is that he loses some pleasant moments, which could do him no harm, and some pleasanter companions than he'll find in his own thoughts, either in his dusty office or in his mouldy old chambers. I pity him. Mm. He may rail at Christmas as he does, but if he finds me going in there in good temper year after year and wishing him all the joy and compliments of the season, surely he can't help thinking better of it at last. If it only puts him in the vein to leave his poor clerk £50, that's something, surely.
Well, I'm tired of all this talk of your Uncle Scrooge. It's quite cast a blight on our party. No. Indeed it has. Mean old skin.
Oh, indeed it has. Indeed it has. I vote we have a game.
Oh, yes, game.
Blind game. Man's buff.
Oh, no. For you only ever catch the same person.
Oh.
And then we all have to sit by while you squeeze and pinch her for half an hour, pretending you don't know who it is. Let's play a new game. Let's play yes and no.
Yes and no? I've never heard of it.
How do you play that?
Do you have to wear a blindfold? I've got a blindfold.
No, you do not. Put the handkerchief away, Topper, and sit down. Now, I have to think of something, and you have to guess what it is.
How do we do that?
We're not mind readers.
You asked me questions about it.
All right, then. What is it?
You asked me questions about it, but I can only answer yes or no.
Oh, very well. You're sure you've thought of something?
Yes.
And you're not going to change your mind halfway through and think of something else?
No.
Is it an animal?
Yes.
A live animal?
Yes.
A nice animal?
No.
A disagreeable animal?
Very. I mean, yes.
Does it growl?
Yes.
Does it grunt?
Yes.
Does it live in London?
Yes.
Growls and grunts and lives in London? Ever can it be, spirit?
But does it live in a menagerie? Does it live in a zoo? No.
Is it killed in a market?
No.
Isn't it a menagerie? Isn't killed in a market?
Is it a horse?
No.
Is it an ass?
No.
Cow?
No.
A bull?
No.
A dog?
A tiger?
No.
A dog?
A dog?
A dog?
A dog?
Yes.
No.
Oh. A pig?
No.
An elephant?
No.
A bear?
No.
A camel?
A mule?
No.
A crocodile?
No.
A rhinoceros?
I know. Fred, I know what it is.
Well, what is it?
Yes, what is it? What is it?
It's your Uncle Scrooge.
So it is. Uncle Scrooge.
Oh, well. Yes, well, I...
Your Uncle Scrooge? Then the answer to is it a bear should have been yes!
Well, he's given us plenty of merriment, I'm sure. It will be ungrateful of us not to drink his health. Raise your glasses, friends, and join me. Uncle Scrooge.
Uncle Scrooge.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old fellow, whatever he is. You wouldn't take it from me, but he may have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge.
And to you, Fred. Oh, yes. And to you.
Oh. Well, come along now. Since you have a mulled wine in the parlour going cold for lack of company. Come along, my dear.
Permit me, ma'am. And to you all, my dears, and to you all, a Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Years. And, they've gone. They didn't hear me.
What matters is that you wished it to them. Tonight, that blessing is made by sick beds, and they are cheerful. To the wanderer to bring him close to home. To the struggling man, and he is patient in his greater hope.
to the poor, and they are rich. It is made in almshouse, hospital, and prison, in misery's every refuge where vain man in brief authority has not made fast the door and barred the blessing out. We shall see this and hear this, but my time is nearly done.
Our spirits lie so short.
My life upon this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. The time is drawing near.
Forgive me, spirit, but I see something strange and not belonging to yourself protruding from beneath the hem of your gown. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw for all the flesh there is upon it. Look. Here.
From the foldings of its robe, it brought forth two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They were a boy and a girl. Where graceful youth should have filled their features out, a stale and shriveled hand like that of age had pinched and twisted them. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out menacingly.
Oh, spirits, are they yours?
They are man's. They cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all, beware the boy. For on his brow I see that written, which is doom, unless the writing be erased.
Have they no refuge or resorts?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
Scrooge looked up to placate the ghost and saw it not. As the last stroke of 12 ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley. He turned and, lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom draped and hooded in deepest black, its face hidden and nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand coming like a mist along the ground towards him. Its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knelt before it as it drew nigh and towered above him.
I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
The spirit answered not, but pointed onwards with its hand.
You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not appeared, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?
The spirit inclined its head.
Ghost of the future. I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? Lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit.
The city seemed to spring up out of the ground and encompass them. And there they were in the heart of it, on the exchange, among the merchants. Scrooge looked about in that very place to seek his own image. But another man stood in his accustomed corner.
No, I don't know much about it either way. I don't get tuppence neither. I only know he's dead.
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
Why?
What was the matter with him? Thought he'd never die.
Well, what did he die of?
God knows.
What's he done with his money?
I haven't heard. Left it to his company, I suppose. I mean, he'd nobody else. Hasn't left it to me. That's all I know. It's likely to be a very cheap funeral for all my life. I don't know of anybody to go to it.
Not I, for one. He'd never have taken time off from his business to see me laid to rest.
The phantom floated onwards into an obscure part of the town, where the ways were foul and narrow, the people half-naked, drunken, slipshod, ugly. deep in this den of infamous resort, a hovel half hidden under mountains of unseemly rags, masses of corrupted fat and offal, and sepulchres of bones, where sat a grey-haired rascal, smoking his pipe in all the luxury of calm retirement.
Good day to old Jones. I was here first, I think.
I think I have the advantage of you both, lady.
Well, and there's a merry meeting, to be sure.
Why, yes, if we hadn't been seen met here without me, lady.
You couldn't have met in a better place, Mrs. Gilbert, my dear. The charwoman, the laundress, and the undertaker's man, eh? Come into my parlour, my dears. Come into my parlour. You were made free of it. Long ago, Mrs. Gilbert. And the other two ain't no strangers, eh? Well, shut the door and be private, I think. you all made remarkable good speed, my dears. Remarkable good speed. You can't have been dead above an hour or two.
What odds, then, eh? What odds? Every person has a right to take care of themselves. Yeah. He almost did.
That's true indeed. No man more so.
I'm not going to pick holes in each other's coats, I should hope.
No, indeed, my dears. I should hope not, indeed.
Very well, then. That's enough. Who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose. If he wanted to keep him after he was dead, wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying, gasping out his last there, alone by himself.
That's the truest word that was ever spoke. It's a judgment on him.
It is, yeah.
Open the bungalow, Joe, and we know the value of it. Yeah. Speak out, plain. Yeah. I'm not afraid to be the first.
Well, now, sit. Yes. Charles, a little wear in apparel. Right. 2 teaspoons. Old-fashioned. A pair of sugar tongs. 3 boots. Oh, dear. I always gives too much to the ladies. It's a weakness of mine, and that's the way I ruin myself. Here.
Just a minute. Is this all?
If you ask me for another penny and made it an open question, I'd repent of being so liberal and knock off half a crown. Oh. Now then. Oh, Mr. Undertaker's man, let's see what you've brought me. Seals. Yeah. 2. Pencil case. 1. Sleeve buttons. 2. A brooch.
Yes.
No great value, eh? You're there. Not a penny more.
Undo my bundle, Joe.
Oh, now then, Mrs. Gilbert. And what if we're here, eh? What do you call these, eh? Bed curtains.
Bed curtains.
You don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there?
Yes, I do. Why not?
You were born to make your fortune, Mrs. Gilbert, and you certainly do it.
I certainly shan't hold my hand when I'll get something into it by reaching it out. For the sake of such a man as he was, I promise you. Now, I should go dropping lamp oil upon them blankets now.
These blankets?
Who else do you think?
Oh, dear me.
Well, really. It's likely to take cold without them, I dare say.
Yeah. I hope he didn't die of anything catching.
Hey? What's that? Don't be afraid of that. I ain't so fond of his company that I'd loiter about for such things. If he did. You may look through that shirt in your eyes, eh? But you won't find a hole in it nor a threadbare place. It's the best he has, and a fine one, too. They'd have wasted him, if it hadn't been for me.
Now, what do you call wasting of it?
What did you want him to be buried in, to be sure? Somebody was fool enough to do it.
Well,
but I took it off again, and it can't look uglier than he did in that one.
Well, here you are, Mrs. Gilbert, my dearie. Take this. You've earned it.
This is the end of it, you see. He frightened everybody away from him when he was alive to profit us when he was dead.
Spirit, the case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now.
Heavens,
What is this?
The scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bed, a bare, uncurtained bed, on which, beneath a ragged sheet, there lay a something which, though it was dumb, announced itself in awful language. Scrooge glanced towards the phantom. Its steady hand was pointed to the head. The cover was so carelessly adjusted that the slightest raising of it upon Scrooge's part would have disclosed the face. But he had no more power to remove the veil than he had to dismiss the phantom at his side.
This is a dreadful, dark and empty house. Not a man, woman or child is here in this hour of cold, cold, rigid death to say he was kind to me in this or that, and now, for the memory of one kind word, I will be kind to him. No sound save the gnawing rats. Spirits, this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson. Let us go.
Still the ghost pointed with an unmoved finger to the head.
I understand you, and I would do it if I could. But I have not the power, Spirit. I have not the power. Oh, Spirit, let me see some tenderness connected with a death, or this dark chamber will be forever present to me.
The ghost conducted him through several streets familiar to his feet, and as they went along, Scrooge looked here and there to find himself, but nowhere was he to be seen. They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. They were quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner and sat looking at Peter, who had a book before him.
And he took a little child and set him in the midst of them.
Rest your poor eyes, Peter. And tired and red. So am I. It's the sewing. It's the colour. It hurts my eyes.
The colour? Black. Oh, no. Poor tiny Tim.
It makes them weep by candlelight, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. Must be near his time.
Past it, rather. But I think he's walked a little slower than he used to these last few evenings, Mother.
I've known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed.
And so have I often.
And so have I.
And I.
But he was very light to carry, and Father loved him so that it was no trouble, no trouble at all. There is your father at the door.
Good evening, my dears.
Come along, Robert. Sit you down at the table. Your tea's ready for you.
Here you are, Father.
Aye. How well you're doing with your sewing. Be done long before Sunday.
It's to be Sunday then, Robert.
Sunday. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him I would walk there for Sunday. Oh, my little child. My little... To try.
What's your father?
Father.
There now, now, Robert. I saw Mr. Scrooge's nephew in the street. He asked me what was the matter, for I suppose I did look a little down. I told him. I scarcely know him, but he's such a pleasant-spoken fellow. He said, I am heartily sorry for it, Mr. Cratchit, he said, and heartily sorry for your good wife. If I can be of service to you in any way, he said, giving me his card, that's where I live. Pray come to me. Now, it wasn't for the sake of anything he might be able to do for us, so much as for his kind way that was quite delightful. It really seemed as if he had known our little Tidy Tim and felt with us.
I'm sure he's a good soul.
You would be sure of it, my dear, if you saw and spoke to him. I shouldn't be at all surprised if he got our Peter a better situation.
Oh, only hear that, Peter.
And then Peter will be keeping company with someone and setting up for himself.
Get along with you.
Oh, just as likely as not. But, my dears, however and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting there was amongst us?
Never, Father.
And I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily amongst ourselves and forget poor Tiny Tim in doing so.
No, Father, never.
I am very happy. I am very happy.
Mrs. Cratchit kissed him, and his daughter kissed him. The two young Cratchits kissed him, and Peter and he shook hands. Ah, spirit of Tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God.
Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, yet I know not how. Tell me, what man that was whom we saw lying dead?
No sooner the word than a churchyard. Here, then, the wretched man whose name he had now to learn lay underneath the ground. It was a worthy place, overrun with grass and weeds. The spirit towered like a column of smoke among the graves and pointed down to one.
Before I draw near to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of the things that may be only?
Still the spirit pointed downwards to the grave by which it stood.
Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, but if the courses are departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me.
The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and, following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected, overgrown, uncared for grave.
Ebenezer Scrooge, am I the man who lay upon the bed? No, spirit, oh, no, no, spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been, but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may get changed. These shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all here. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on that stone. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year round. Heaven and Christmas time be praised. Why, where am I? What's all this? Curtains? My curtains? My own bedpost, my own bed curtains. They have not been torn down, rings and all. They are here. I am here in my own room. The shadows of the things that would be, may be dispelled. They will be dispelled. I know they will. Get dressed. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. Whoops. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. What's that? Why, it's me. I laughed. I can laugh. I don't know what time it is, what day it is, what month it is, but I can laugh. I don't know how long I've been among the spirits. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. I don't care. I'd rather be a baby. The window. Let's have a look. Come on now, you opened easier than this to let Jacob Marley through. Ah, whoops. Oh, glorious, glorious, glorious. Hey there, you.
What?
What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Well, it's Christmas Day, isn't it?
It's Christmas Day. I have missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can, of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
you know the poacher's on the next street but one at the corner?
I should hope I did.
Oh, an intelligent boy. Oh, remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
What? The one as big as me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my buck.
It's hanging there now.
Is it? Go and buy it.
What?
I'm in earnest. Go and buy it. Tell them to bring it here. Come back with a man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes. I'll give you half a crown. God rest you, merry gentlemen. Let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born this Christmas day. To save us all, to save us all. Thank you, spirits. I shan't forget, spirits. I shan't forget.
He wound his muff around his neck with such enthusiasm, it was like to choke him, crammed his hat upon his head at a decided tilt, and fairly capered down the stairs to open the door into the street. He stopped to take the corner of his muffler and give the knocker on the door a grateful polish. And that is where I came across him.
I shall love it as long as I live. You're a wonderful knocker.
Mr. Scrooge.
My dear sir, how do you do? I hope you succeeded yesterday. It was very kind of you to be so caring. A Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Is it Mr. Scrooge?
It is, sir. It is. That is my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. I humbly ask your pardon, sir. And will you have the goodness to let me present you with my note for £500?
Five. Lord bless me. My dear Mr. Scrooge, I see.
Oh, yes, yes, if you please. Not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favor?
My dear sir, I don't know what to say to such a gentleman.
Please don't say anything. Come and see me tomorrow. Will you come to see me, please?
I will.
Oh, thank you. I'm much obliged to you. Thank you 50 times. Bless you. Bless you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you. God bless you. A Merry Christmas to you.
What?
What's that? A Merry Christmas to me? Why, yes, of course, a Merry Christmas to me, a Merry Christmas to me.
Are you the gent wanting the bird?
Ah, the turkey. My, was there ever such a turkey? Was there ever such a fine bird for a Christmas morning, eh? Yeah, my dear fellow. And now, my fine buck, do you think you can carry that?
Well,
For 5 shillings?
Oh, yes, sir.
Then here we are. Half a crown for fetching the man, and 5 shillings for the carrying. Now, follow me.
You give me too much, sir. Here's your change.
Oh, keep it, my dear fella. Keep it, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, well, and a Merry Christmas to you, sir. And many of them.
Yes.
And a Happy New Year.
Yes, a Merry Christmas to me, to all of us. Come on, my lad, follow me.
Where to, sir?
Why, to Camden Town, to Bob Cratchit's. Come along, then, off we go.
Uncle Scrooge?
Fred, my dear fellow, wonderful to see you. A Merry Christmas to you.
Uncle Scrooge,
and
are you all right?
My pretty niece, may I? A Merry Christmas, my dear.
Are you all right, Uncle?
All right. All right. Never better, Fred, my dear fellow. Fred.
Yes, Uncle?
Forgive my rudeness yesterday. Your invitation to dinner, does it still stand, Fred?
Of course it does, Uncle.
Then I'll come, if I may.
If you may, you'll be the most welcome guest there.
Oh, God bless you, Fred. God bless you. I want to have a serious talk with that friend of yours, Topper.
Why, I didn't know you ever met Topper, Uncle. What do you want to talk to him about?
It's high time he proposed to that sister of yours, my dear, and put himself out of his misery. Well, come along, my lad. Camden Town. Oh, and can we be sure to play that game?
What game, Uncle?
Why, yes and no, of course. What else? A Merry Christmas to you both.
A Merry Christmas to you, Uncle.
Over that hall the moon shines bright. The bells of paradise, I heard them ring, proclaiming our Saviour And I love my Lord Jesus above anything.
Bravo! Well done, lad.
He learned it all by himself, too.
Now it's Peter's turn.
No, I can't.
Yes, you can. Come on, Peter.
Who can that be, I wonder?
I'll go.
But who on earth would be calling on Christmas morning?
Cratchit.
Oh, no.
What does he want?
He wants to come in.
Oh, my goodness. Let him in, Peter. Let him in.
Open his children. Away from the fire.
Mr. Scrooge, sir.
Cratchit.
Yes, sir?
What do you mean by this?
What?
I said, what do you mean by it?
Well, it's Christmas, sir.
Christmas?
Only once a year, sir.
No, I'll tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer.
Sir.
And therefore, I'm going to raise your salary. Raise it, I'm going to double it. Well, don't look at me like that, eh? What's the matter with me? Something the matter with me?
Mr. Scrooge, I...
Merry Christmas, Bob, my good fellow. A merrier Christmas than I've given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we'll discuss your affairs this afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Mrs. Cratchit, my dear lady, I should like, if I may, to shake your hand.
Mr. Scrooge.
I give you my word, ma'am, that I shall no longer be the ogre of this family. And I hope that you'll let me, ma'am, after all you've suffered at my hands, be a friend.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Mrs. Cratchit, ma'am, outside is a young fella bent double under the weight of a bird that I'd be glad if you'd accept and set about cooking for your real Christmas dinner.
Oh.
Fetch them both in, ma'am. I think you'll find it a good deal bigger than Tiny Tim here. Well, now, Tiny Tim, may I shake your hand, sir?
Are you really Mr. Scrooge?
I am. I must confess it. I cannot deny it.
Why, sir? You're not at all what I expected.
I should hope I am not. Indeed, I promise you I am not. Though every word you've heard about me in the past has been true. I'm certain of that.
Oh, Mr. Scrooge, is it?
Henceforth, though, I hope... Well, I hope for many things, but with your father's permission... And you couldn't have a finer father, Tim.
I know it, sir.
We must set about getting you well, mustn't we? Good food and medicines and clean, fresh air and a Merry Christmas to you. A Merry Christmas to all of us.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Scrooge was better than his word, and to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. And may that be truly said of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone.
In A Christmas Carol, Michael Gough played Scrooge, with Freddie Jones as the narrator, Robert Edeston as the ghost of Jacob Marley, Elizabeth Lindsay as the ghost of Christmas Past, and Peter Woodthorpe as the ghost of Christmas Present. Mrs. Dilber was played by Anna Wing, and Old Joe by Ronald Herdman. Douglas Hodge was Scrooge's nephew, and Petra Markham his wife. Danny Schiller played Bob Cratchit, Vivian Pickles Mrs. Cratchit, and Hugo Mendes Tiny Tim. Mr. Fezziwig was Timothy Bateson, and Mrs. Fezziwig, Maxine Audley. Belle was Joanna Myers, young Scrooge, Andrew Wincott, and Dick Wilkins, Terence Edmund. Other parts were played by Emma Gregory, Ian Lindsay, Timothy Carlton, Danielle Allen, Henry Power, Louise Cann, James Holland, Miriam Arton, Marlene Gordon, and Simon Doe. The music was by Elizabeth Parker of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, with musical direction by Keith Williams. And the violinist was Perry Montague Mason. The director was Janet Whittaker.